you look like you're in at work. I thought you were on maternity leave.
I am. I had just came. I just came in for a brainstorm because I'm coming back in 2 weeks. So yeah. I came in for just like a brainstorm of what we're gonna do when I come back and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah.
How's it all looking? How's it all lining up?
It's gonna be good. I think it's also like it's always weird when you've been away for a bit to come back in and people are used to you not being there, and then kind of come back and. You know, like everyone switches back to where they were and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's just kind of getting used to it again, but it'll be fine. Last time I went on maternity leave, I didn't have anyone fill in, so it was pretty seamless in and out. But this time I did, so, yeah, it's just kind of switching back in.
And how's life at the edge at the moment?
It's really good. It's like I'm kind of excited about it because we've obviously been through, like, a huge transition.
Yeah.
And so... now I kind of feel like we're starting all over again and to be part of like completely rebuilding something that I grew up with since I was like 13 is quite exciting, but it is daunting, but it's also really exciting.
Because when you went on maternity leave, were you still part of TV3 as well, or had that transition already happened completely?
We had already split when I went on maternity leave. Yeah. So we were already, that whole thing just kind of happened. It didn't really affect us at all, really. But but that just kind of happened. It must have been a good, maybe 6 months before, or I can't remember.
And what? About, and so the transition, as you're talking about, are you talking about, for example, you know, kind of finally the end of JJ, Mike, and Dom, with Dom moving on, new breakfast team. That's sort of the relaunching of a new station almost, and Clint as well now.
It's kind of like. I notice in radio that you have, in the office, you have like a 3-4 year exodus where that kind of the office changes.
Yeah.
And so where people get promoted or they leave radio or whatever. And so we've got a new office team. We've got a brand new breakfast show and a new day. They've changed the structure of the day show. We've played around with the music. So it's kind of like we threw all the old edge stuff out.
Yeah.
And rebirthing ourselves with all the things that we align with and new personalities and new styles of how we do things, which is quite exciting. Like kind of moving away from things that Edge probably were known for, and it's more about, to me anyway, like real conversations and just having fun.
Yeah. That's exciting. I mean, real conversations is an exciting thing. It's kind of where I think the world should be going. It's what we try and do here, and it's like just getting rid of all the bullshit and talking about real things and having fun with while you're doing it.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. That's what I love about, I mean, we've been trying to do that for a while now, and it's just kind of like, I don't know. I don't know if it's because I've gotten older and I've done it longer and I'm more confident within myself, but I would much rather have a real conversation than, like, even with interviews, like, with an interview, having a proper conversation rather than having a conversation and doing a wacky bit at the end of it to get like a funny moment. Like I'd rather just have a long conversation with somebody. And I find that the interviews are way more interesting because I don't think that talent that you interview really want to be doing wacky games either.
Yeah. I mean, you see it when you're, watching those press junkets, and that one interview blows up all over the world because, you know, the young reporter talked to, you know, a Demi Lovato or whoever it is, a young female singer at the time, like, will you go to my prom with me? It's a completely different conversation from what they get every other time. And it's what the artist seems to like most of all, because it's different. And it seems to be the thing that the viewer or listener wants most at all, because it's not just a fucking carbon copy of every other interview they see on every other outlet. So I completely get it, mate. I think you're onto something there. I think it's be a great way to go. The only thing that you'll probably strike, sounds really arrogant saying this, but you have restrictions within the mainstream media of ad breaks and that kind of stuff, and having to get to things. Whereas on other platforms that don't have that, you can just keep going till you're finished. There is, obviously, if you've got Ed Sheeran in the studio, always an allotted time frame, which makes it more difficult. But if the intention's there, I'm sure you guys will do it in whatever way that looks like for your show.
Yeah, totally. Because, like, usually what we would do is and we've done it for the last couple of years now, is that we just start recording and we have, you know, you have those fun conversations as well. We like, oh, do you want to go to my prom with me? Or like, yeah. I asked Will Ferrell if he wanted to MC my wedding and things like that. And nice. It's kind of, like you have those conversations, but you also have really interesting conversations with people too. And we just leave it all running and we will chop up the bits that are like good for radio. And then we will put the full thing on our podcast where people can go and listen to it unedited if they want to as well.
Yeah.
And those are usually kind of my favorite ones because there's some questions that I find super interesting that probably aren't, you know, your edge after school audience that want to hear it, you know?
Yeah, you're talking about getting a bit older and stuff as well. I was in the radio industry since the mid to late 90s sort of thing. And it's interesting watching various people age in radio. Not that you're aging at all, you're a youngster still. But, you know, talking to the Manu Taylor over at MyFM about how Robbie Rakete was sort of in an age group that wasn't speaking to the audience so much, or, you know, Polly and Grant at ZM, or those sorts of things. Is it more difficult being on a station that arguably is aiming at sort of, I guess, what, Zoomers now, Gen Z and maybe Gen Y? And is there ever conversations around yourself or any of the announcers kind of getting to an age where maybe it's time to move on? By the way, not suggesting that of you at all, but just wondering about how that conversation goes in the offices, if at all.
There is a conversation that I've never been involved in that conversation, so I don't know how those conversations go down when you are looking to transition. Yeah. I know that I am very, very aware of it. So our target is 18 to 35, and right. I'm 36, so I'm really aware of when I'm going to be too old for the edge. And that isn't because I mean, part of it is probably me being Sharonoia, but also I listened to this station as a 13-year-old, I freaking loved it.
Yeah.
I know that eventually 18-year-olds aren't going to give a shit what I think. Like, you know, there's people that are on CHR brands that are over 40 now, who I remember back in the day were saying that people who were over 40 were too old, but now they're doing it. And it's kind of like, I think if you can stay connected to your audience, then you can stay, you know, as long as you can, really, until you stop rating or people stop relating to you. But yeah. My vibe is more, okay, I'm a 36-year-old woman, so how am I going to relate to those 18-year-olds or whatever? I can still do that. But also, I have Sophie, who reads our news, who is perfectly bang on in that demographic.
Yep.
I can either be egotistical and be like, this is my show, I will be talking to everyone, or I could be intelligent about it and say, hey, so if you know about this more than me, come and talk to the listeners, because it's not about me or my ego. And also it means when I'm moving on, there's another talented broadcaster to go straight in after me, and there's no like, oh, what do we do now? Because no one else has ever been given a chance.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I do it, is I just pull in as many people as possible to make a great show. And when it becomes obvious to me, because I think it'll become obvious to me before anyone else, that I can't do that anymore, then I'll remove myself. But if I get removed before that, that's fine. But it's something I am very aware of. And in my brain, I'm like, okay, I'm going to tap out at this age and do something different. And every time I say that to my bosses, they're like, no, it'll be longer than that. And I'm like, no, because I know what it's like to listen to somebody that old on a youth brand. But also, I really love programming as much as I love on air. And eventually, I want to go back into programming and not mind my life all the time and not be on air and just go and like do all the fun stuff. Like, I love programming music and I love coming up with promo ideas and things like that. So yeah, eventually I'll come off air, and my dream is to either go into talent development or go back into programming.
Oh, very cool. The idea about pulling people in around you, I've heard you talk before about, you know, telling people to turn up at 6 o'clock on Sunday, and you'd help them kind of with their announcing sort of thing. I did a very, very short, very, very bad stint at primary school teaching way back when, then left that and kind of got into TV and radio. Mm-hmm. But, and I've told this story before, and I think it relates to what you're saying. my experience of more senior teachers was there was two kinds. There was the kinds that went, this person is a beginning teacher, a year one teacher. Mm-hmm. They don't know anyone, anything. Stay out of my way. And there was the people, the senior teachers that went, this is a beginning teacher. They've just gone through all the training. They might have some new ideas that could help all of us. Let's get from them as well. And those ones, that's what I hear you saying about yourself to do with broadcasting, bringing in people that have other ideas and stuff that you may not be aware of because of age or experience or whatever it is, are always the people who are most successful in their field. Because the difference between that and sort of protecting your patch is night and day. Because the other thing is, you know, you hear about people who don't train anybody else in how to do certain things to keep their job safe. It's a very selfish way to work, but it happens. You know, it happens, and it's not. I try and run by that philosophy that a rising tide lifts all boats.
Yeah.
You know, and that if person beside me succeeding in the thing that I'm doing, if they're getting successful, then that means that tide's raising my boat as well. So I think it's a very smart way to run, and it's normally what gets you the best content as well.
Totally. And I don't think, like, you hear of stations or shows or whatever that are very clicky, they're very insular, they do their show, they clock out. That's not my vibe, because we're not gonna, and that's my one thing I've always said to The Edge, and I always say it whenever, you know, someone leaves or whatever, it's the first thing I always say is The Edge is the most successful when we all move as one unit. The Edge isn't successful when one show does their own thing and another show does their own thing and there's cliques of the young people, the old people. When we all embrace each other, that's when we're unstoppable. And that's, I feel like our vibe at the moment is we're all like, holy shit, we've got Everest to climb. We are starting again, but we all love each other. We all hang out. Nobody's got beef. There's no cliques. We all just want to like do our best and rebuild it together. And that's why, you know, some people have been like, oh, don't you want to jump ship? You know, The Edge seems like it's doing this. And I don't want to jump ship. My boss, Casey, is awesome. I love working with him, and I'm not being a greaser. I've literally watched Casey start 2 weeks after I did it at The Edge 17 years ago. I watched him work his ass off from intern, the intern that then didn't get chosen to stay after his internship. Wow. Never give up, and now he's the boss. Like, I've literally watched his trajectory, and I love working for someone like that. I find it really inspiring, and the people that all work around me are equally as inspiring. You know, like, they don't laugh at me, because my work's always like, Sharon, you need to get on TikTok. I'm like, I hate TikTok. It makes me feel 100. And they don't laugh at me that I'm now like, okay, guys, I get it. TikTok's very fun. And they don't laugh when I put in the group chat, can someone help me? How do I do this on TikTok? They're like, send it to me and they'll show me how to do it, because that's kind of our vibe that we have now. And I really love that.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm not great at TikTok, but I've got some great young people around me that help me out.
One of your TikToks that I particularly enjoyed was the pregnancy announcing. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Feeling,
just telling people casually.
Oh, that's my co-host. Oh, that's my husband.
Yeah.
This is promo.
This is my favorite. That one there. Oh my fucking god. Yeah. That was the best one. I love that. That was the favorite one.
Yeah, because that was the. What was funny about that is, it was like telling my siblings at work that I was pregnant. And Steph, who was the first one, she was one of the girls, women, that I said, hey, come in at 6 o'clock, I'll teach you. And Steph has worked her ass off and continues to, and she's such a great broadcaster, and it's been amazing watching her grow. Yeah. So it was really exciting telling her, because also she had, hope she doesn't mind saying this, but recently she'd been, when I was pregnant and no one knew, she was talking to me about her contract and stuff, and I was like, oh, you should definitely, like, and trying to say things without telling her, like, you need to make sure there's going to be some opportunities coming up, because both me and I were going on maternity leave at the same time.
Stick around.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, you should. Yeah, some great opportunities are going to come up for you. Like, yeah, I reckon there's going to be some good chances. And the same with Jaden. Like, he's my co-host, and he was so excited. Like, he was so emotional about it, and he's been such a great support throughout everything that we've been through with that pregnancy and birth and stuff. And Yeah, so like that video makes me real emotional to watch because it shows exactly what I was telling you. It's not bullshit. We all genuinely fucking love each other. Yeah. And we care about each other more than just what we can deliver each other in the office.
I know what you mean, though, about TikTok. I've got a TikTok account as well, and I wasn't using it. For at the start of my TikTok account, it was basically just all dog videos.
Yeah.
And then I've started to use it for work videos. So I do another product, which is a daily news show, Big Hairy News. And,
cool.
Yeah, and so it's turned into maybe a few clips from that along the way. But, yeah, it's tough to get away from the dog videos, you know?
Yeah.
They seem to be
waiting for a good day
just in there all the time. Say again?
That's a good dog video, though.
Yeah, she's in the studio with me. She's she's my studio. I can show you if you want. You want to meet my dog?
Yeah, show me your dog. What's your dog's name?
Bring it. Nala. Here's my dog. Hey, Nala. Oh, I just said her name. That's why she looked up.
Hi, Nala.
Hey, Nala.
Oh. You're right.
That's Dog Cam.
Dog Cam is fantastic. I would dog Cam.
Yeah, no. So she hangs out with me in the studio. So, I do a show most nights at 10 p.m. It's the news show. And people know when the kids are here and not at their mums because the dog's in the studio with me when the kids aren't here.
Yeah.
And when the kids are here, the dog is not in the studio with me.
Not with you, yeah.
The kids are much more fun than me. Yeah. So,
that's so the same in my house.
She ends up being up there. Hey, just on the radio thing as well before we move off it, kind of breaking news, I guess, in the last couple of days about Sky TV. Looking to acquire MediaWorks. What's the buzz? What's the goss? Give us some tea.
I actually genuinely have no tea because I didn't know. I saw there was like an email that went out. The one thing I really, and I hope, I don't mean to sound like a kiss ass talking about bosses, but I think if you've ever heard me, I don't usually, you know, but one thing I really like about Cam, our new CEO, is he's a great communicator and he's very active on the floor. Like he walks the floor all the time, and so you see him most days in the building talking to someone, and it doesn't matter if you're on air or an intern or whatever, he's always walking the floor. So I saw he'd sent an email out and I was like, yeah, I'll read that later, because he sends a lot of emails because he wants to tell us everything that's happening. And then Bryce, my husband who works The Rock, he came home, he's like, oh, did you see the thing about Sky? And I was like, I haven't read it yet. And so that's about as much as I know, is that there were conversations going on and it was in a negotiation period or something, but I don't know the latest. So you probably have more tea than me.
It's pretty exciting. I mean, I think what's going to happen long term in media is there will be significant mergers across the world. Like there can't stay this many streaming services. It's just not possible for them to have 25 streaming services. And so at some stage it'll go down to 3. You know, Netflix will acquire Hulu and Hulu will acquire HBO Max and Peacock will be acquired, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It can't stay like this where people are paying for, you know, so many different services. Because what ends up happening is no one provides any services and everyone just gets it off the internet. Because they're like, if I can't have 9 different payments going out, although sometimes I look at my outgoing payments, I think, shit, I should cancel some of these. But I can't have 9 different payments because I like 9 different things from 9 different providers. It's just, it's not possible. And I think that's probably the same within, I guess you'd call it mainstream media, is that, you know, and we're seeing it with RNZ and TVNZ, which I think is a good move. I know there are some people who think it's a bad move. I think it's a good move to get like some kind of BBC model. But the idea of television and radio going together is great. It's kind of ironic how MediaWorks is just separated from their television arm. And now there's another sort of television company looking to come on board with MediaWorks, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I always liked the mix between TV3 and media and the radio stations when it was one thing. So I think, I think it's exciting, and I think bigger hopefully provides more opportunities, and that can only be good.
Yeah, I think it was more like obviously I work for 3 and Discovery or whatever. I think it's like it'll be a smart move if we combine if each holds themselves up, you know, like, because I think for a long time radio was holding TV up, so we'd make all this money and then have to give it to TV, and then radio couldn't get the things that they wanted because they'd have to, you know, like support kind of like your cousin that always wanted money, I guess. hope it doesn't get me in trouble and get me fired, but whatever. But I think that was pretty obvious what was happening. So when we did separate, it was good for both to stand on their own two feet. And I think, you know, Discovery's done really well with, you know, standing and rebranding and doing all their stuff too. And but yeah, right, it'll be interesting to see if that's the way that it happens. And I mean, Sky's got Neon and stuff too, so I freaking love Neon. Hopefully we get a free Neon subscription. That's my dream. That'll save
you
some money.
And I wonder if everyone will be wanting their Sky Sports subscription. Discovery is interesting as well, because they seem to be doing, you know, pushes through the whole world. I mean, they now own CNN, and they've brought in some massive changes in the last month. That $800 million CNN Plus service got just cancelled. And I read a report yesterday that that they're dropping the breaking news banner on CNN because because the cable network's using breaking news for everything all the time, thus meaning there is no breaking news. Like there's an ongoing story for a week, and 3 days into it, they go, breaking news. This is an update on the latest ongoing story. It's not breaking news. So they've actually put out I don't know if it's an edict or a direction or whatever, that they're going to stop using the breaking news banner as much. And you're already seeing that coming in the CNN thing. So Discovery's making moves around the world. I think it's kind of cool to be involved for TV3 in something that is looking to dominate the global market. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I think it is too. There's a really exciting part to it. And I also just think that I like that Three are still trying to do things. You know, like I was worried when we would go together that all of a sudden all of our local shows would just get sliced. And I mean, there's some things have changed on, you know, Three or whatever. But I do like that they're still trying to do local shows and trying to do new local shows as well. So it should be quite cool. I guess while we're talking about radio, there was one thing that I wanted to mention because I was interested in what your point of view was on, because it's a conversation that the women I work with quite a lot. Sure. And I was wondering if it was something that you noticed as like a male in media is like, have you ever noticed that female broadcasters always get called female broadcasters, but you never hear male broadcaster? Because we were talking about this recently, because it's like... Because obviously there are more men than women on air, but slowly that is changing, which is awesome. And we've had like these amazing women, you know, before my time, you know, like Kerry Woodham, Stacey Morrison, Tracy Donaldson, JJ, like incredible women. But it was something we were talking about this morning about at the Radio Awards. There's been a couple of times when male broadcasters have gone up and they've got a female co-host and they say something like, oh, and... thank you to my female co-host, who is the best female broadcaster in my opinion. And all the female broadcasters in the room are like, oh, so we're like not all broadcasters. We're just like nobody. You didn't turn around and then say, and my male co-host is the best male broadcaster. It's kind of like, I think that's like a really interesting thing that I'm excited about seeing change in radio, is that because it's kind of like they were just going, good girl, you did your part too. we're broadcasters as well. You don't have to call us female broadcasters. And we all do refer to ourselves as female broadcasters because sometimes we do kind of feel like unicorns. There aren't as many of us. But also because for so long, that's what we've been called. We're the men, we're just broadcasters, and we are the female broadcasters. And it's kind of like, oh, good on you, you know? And you kind of look at some awards that get given out and you're like, I've only ever seen one woman win that award, and it was in a team. There's never been a woman win that award. But yeah, I don't know. I was interested to see if it was something that you had noticed, or if it's just like something that maybe some of us have noticed.
I to be honest with you, I haven't noticed it a lot. But then, you know, when you buy a car and all of a sudden you see your car everywhere because you notice that you're like, shit, look how many VW Beetles there are. I never knew until I bought one. So maybe being female, it's something that you notice more. So I guess what I'm saying is probably from my arrogant non-female position, it's not something I've noticed. But the other thing is I've never really been someone who's been in the circle of, I mean, I've won a lot of awards. No, I'm kidding. But I've never really played that game, like going to the awards shows and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I hate it with a passion. I got told when I was at ZB by a boss there that I wouldn't be as successful as some of the others because when they all turned up, they'd go to the opening of a paper bag. And I just said, I'm not prepared to do that. And they went,
that's not my vibe either.
It'll affect your career. They told me bluntly, it'll affect my career. And I'm like, oh, well, so be it. I wonder as well, though. It's an interesting conversation because it makes me think of John McEnroe's comments about, I can't think of the name of the tennis player, yeah, Will Smith movie, the two daughters, Serena and Venus. Venus Williams, I think it was. Oh. And he said she is the greatest female tennis player there's ever been. Mm. And he got hauled over the coals for it because he was saying, well, she's not the greatest ever. That's, you know, other people are. She is the greatest female. And I wonder if in a situation where physicality and your stature and your muscle and that separating of the two two sexes is not such a big deal. But in broadcasting, when you're just speaking, it doesn't – like I can't ever imagine there being a best male broadcaster and a best female broadcaster. An official award, that wouldn't make any sense. But in saying that, at the Oscars, there's best male actor and there's best female actor. So they do it there as well. Is the female actor at the Oscars considered lesser than the male award or not? I don't know.
No, I think it's the same thing. I think some of the award shows have combined it. And I know what you're saying, and you're totally right. But when we're all in the same categories,
that's
like just kind of that stuff where you're like, I don't know, you just never hear, like I think actor, actresses, yes, because you're doing different roles. Whereas
broadcasting,
we're all doing the same thing, you know?
Yep.
It's like you don't have male chef, female chef, they're just chefs.
Mm.
And that, I don't know, maybe it's something that we've overthought, but we were talking about it in the office and I was like, I wonder what Pat thinks about that because, you know, as someone on the outside, and I am the same as you, I get things all the time to go to premieres or openings and stuff and I'm just like, no, I don't want to go to something where I'm going to feel socially anxious and someone that I know that doesn't like me will go, oh my God, we should catch up. And you're like, yeah, we should. We're never going to catch up because like no professors do not like me and we don't have to like each other. And so I hate that stuff. And I've won 2 radio awards, I think, in 17 years. So not a radio award winner either. But I just found it real interesting when you sit there and you're like, when will we just be broadcasters, you know?
So there's two sides to this. I had a big conversation with my 15-year-old 2 nights ago and we were talking about things like gender and that. And what I quite often do with my kids is I don't necessarily take a position, but I will offer them the critiques from both sides because I think critical thinking is really important. And so when she says an absolute item, I go, but what about this? And I go, now remember, this is not necessarily my opinion, but what about this perspective? How do we look at it this way? Thinking about what you've said, taking 2 steps back, going, if females aren't recognized enough in media at the moment, in other words, they're not represented fairly, in other words, 50-50 sort of thing.
Yeah.
Then could it also be that when someone points out this is my co-host and my female co-host broadcaster, on the other side of the same coin, could it also be that person going, because there's not enough of these people in the industry, we need to acknowledge, you know, that she is female because we need more and we need to move towards the point where we don't look on stage and go, oh, there's a girl. There's a girl up there. Isn't that lovely? There's a girl.
Yeah.
Well, are they saying when they say that as an acceptance speech, they're kind of almost saying what you're saying, but maybe they're just wording it in a different way by saying, we need a stage in the future where... You know, it's like that movie, the name's just jumped out of my head, Starship Troopers. Starship Troopers, where they have the scene, I don't know if you've seen the movie, they have a scene that's set in the future, they have a scene that says they're an army and all the men and women are in the shower at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? They're just all having a shower at the same time. So in that future, like sex wasn't seen as a separating thing for society. I'm not saying that all the radio announcers want to have a shower at the same time, but
probably do
we need to get to a point where that's not recognized on stage, not seen on stage as something unique and different. And I wonder if the person saying that speech about their co-host is sort of acknowledging that as well, but just doing it in a clunky way.
That's a really good way of looking at it. It is a really good way of looking at it, and I hadn't thought about that because I remember we were all just sitting there as a bunch of us and we were like, are we all competing against each other now? Because like I didn't know we were, and it was because you never hear the reverse. You don't think, Oh, but actually, that's a really good way of looking at it. Maybe we need to be better at describing things as broadcasters.
Well, now, obviously, I'm not defending. If that person was a misogynist, sexist pig as well, and putting it that way, maybe that's fair and accurate as well. I'm just saying,
yeah.
I wasn't there, I didn't hear it, but I could imagine going, you know, isn't it incredible that my daughter, for example, is XYZ,
yeah.
because I'm acknowledging that my daughter is female, and in this space, yeah. there's not, I don't know.
No, I totally understand what you mean now. And it wasn't like, to be clear, it wasn't one particular incident.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It happened like a few times, and that's what started the conversation. And we were talking about it this morning. So it was like fresh in my mind where I was like, I wonder if Pat thinks that's weird. And like, I love these conversations where you can be like, actually, that's a great perspective. And I know what you mean now. And like, the people that have done it aren't chauvinistic assholes. That's why kind of like, but do people think that, or are we overthinking it? I think, yeah. And I think also the spotlight that has been on that sort of stuff in the last 12 months or 18 months, it's made everybody think about this stuff maybe too much, but also you are way more aware of it, where you're like, is that weird or is it not weird? So it's good to have these conversations about it, but I do hope that we get to a point where it isn't something we have to point out.
I mean, the other thing about this conversation is, like, at the moment we have male and female categories and lots of things, whether they're a physical thing like sport or whether they're an artistic thing like the Oscars, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the conversation would be interesting to say, is it time to drop all of that? Or is it time to keep those in place? And if it is time to keep those in place, maybe there should be a male and a female category at the New Zealand Radio Awards.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's time to keep it in place.
Like, at the moment, it's just, like, at the moment we are joint together.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are definitely awards that are predominantly won by men, but maybe that's because also there are more men than women.
Yeah, and the other thing about that conversation is if there wasn't a separation, like if there wasn't the classes, the sexes separation, in whatever field we're talking about, whether it be sport or art or whatever,
yeah,
would you see females have even less representation?
Yeah, true.
And I'm not saying that's a good thing or an okay thing, but if there weren't the separation of them, would that be where those groups naturally... I think you could say if it was a sporting thing, that would be probably yes.
Yeah.
If it was an artistic thing, there's no reason for that. But, you know, we live in a misogynistic world that's been run by white men for the past millennia and a half.
Yeah.
So it takes quite a long time to break that. And even in the last kind of 5 or 6 years, you know, the Me Too movement that started up, which is unbelievably important and proper and right, then you watch in the last 6 months it being torn apart by the Amber Heard jury. All of a sudden the whole world is laughing at this woman, thinking what a lunatic this woman is. And whether she's right or he's right or they're both wrong, I don't know. But it's gone in the space of 3 years from Believe All Women to look at this lunatic, We Love Johnny. You know what I mean? So it's like, there's a lot of work still to be done to get that equality that you speak of.
it's a massive, so sorry, I feel very sweaty. I get real sweaty in interviews because I never am the person not asking the questions. So when people ask me questions, I'm always like, and then afterwards I get real bad anxiety about things I said. But I totally agree with you. And it's kind of like a when it suits. Like people will be all about equality for one thing, but then, so say for example, lack of, like Jennifer Lawrence, people are like, oh, she's so funny and it's so great how she did all this. Kim Kardashian's a slut because she did a sex tape 20 years ago and she will all, you know, doesn't matter all the good things she's done, she's a slut. And it's like, you can't pick and choose when you're going to be on, you know, like what side of the fence you're going to be on. You pick a side and stick on the side. It's like, it's even like mental health, like I refuse to report because I write entertainment news and a lot of people say, you know, it's a girly job. And you may notice that if there's ever the girl always does entertainment news and if she's away, then they, and every station does it, oh, we better get a girl on to read about that.
Really?
And it's like, oh, it's because guys aren't interested in entertainment news. And it's like, well, like you can get interested. What if a, you know, what if a girl isn't? And I know I've got like a friend like Brian Clint on ZM. Neither of them have an interest in entertainment news. And so they have a guy come on and do it. And I love that. And the good thing is like about I am obsessed with entertainment news. So I enjoy doing it. And that's the same with Meg in the morning. Like, she loves doing it, and so that's why we do it. But there's some stations where you're just like, you've literally just got a girl in to do the entertainment news. But when I do it, I'm very careful about the narratives within that. So when you see someone like Kanye West, who's quite clearly having a bipolar episode,
yeah,
and people are like, mental health, oh, I care. And then you're seeing somebody who, like, and he's done a lot of questionable things, but when he's quite clearly having a manic episode, it's like he's got, people would react differently if he had a broken leg and everyone started kicking him all the time.
Yeah.
You know? But people will just, like, pile on and make memes and be really awful. And it's like, this is clearly a very unwell man. Like, you know? Even though he has definitely done some stuff that is super inappropriate. But it's, yeah, I find that stuff interesting. It's the same with me too, where people jump from one side to the other.
Yeah, and people tend to, I mean, the great thing about when things like that happen, like a movement starts, it needs to start. But the problem is not, not that it's a problem. The thing about the movement is, if it needs to be there, then it needs to stay there. I mean, yeah. All you got to do is think about the last 10 years, whether it's Make Poverty History or, you know, yeah, whatever the monthly wristband that you're wearing is, they disappear very, very quickly. And it's a media thing as well. I was watching a thing on this horrific Uvalde shooting yesterday, and someone in the media made the comment, oh, these news trucks will be gone in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it just made me think, holy crap, that they're right. They will be gone in 2 weeks, and then all the shit going on there at the moment could well be in the rear vision mirror, whereas it's something that needs to start and continue on. But once the media focus gets off it, then it disappears. And I think that's a huge problem. And I think for the Me Too movement as well, that obviously needs to continue on and go on. And but it's not the cause du jour. It's not the current hashtag.
Yeah.
And so then we totally flip. I mean, probably the truth is we totally flip because sometimes we go not too far, but it becomes all encompassing. Like probably somewhere in the middle is the sensible place to do something.
Yeah.
You know, like you hear about celebrities, and you'll know this if you're into the entertainment news, who get fame really quickly.
Yeah.
And then they typically crash really quickly at some stage, where you hear about other guys or girls who get kind of a little bit of fame, like the Morgan Freemans of the world, who wasn't really famous until he was in his 40s. And they kind of grow, and they tend to be the one who seem to be balanced and with it and be able to manage it. You know, things that come on really strong tend to burn really strong, whereas things that are sustainable from day one tend to be around in 5 or 10 years' time. And I don't think it's any different with any of the causes, you know?
Yeah, it's like you got to continuously chip away rather than just be like, look at me, straight away. Like, you've got to constantly keep working hard. You don't just stop once you've got it.
Hey, I was gonna say,
I totally derailed you.
No, but that's what we do. I was also going to say to you, you know, if you want to ask questions, you ask questions. This is a conversation. Oh, it's not really an interview. That's what we try and do. That's why it's called the Department of Conversation.
Great,
say that to some people. They think it's a bit wanky. It's like, I don't do interviews. I don't like interviews. Q&A. I like having chats with people. And if you were here, you probably have a drink or something with me.
Oh, yes, I would. Yes, I would.
Oh, it's 12:42. Is it not? It's 12:42. Not. So we can have a beer at 12:42.
We can do that.
Tell me about Dancing with the Stars. I wanted to ask a question, not to kind of hark on any negatives. It's not necessarily a negative.
No.
But all of that stuff that blew up at the start with Sonia about the voting and all that kind of stuff that supposedly was wrong. Now, I've also read up on this, so we don't need to belabor the point that it wouldn't have made any difference and changed the outcome at all. But I was wondering, I was thinking, that probably did quite good for the ratings, did it? Because it's when I started going, oh, what's going on here? Oh, we better check this out a bit more. Was it something that you guys saw a bump in with all that sort of the hiccup at the start end up being good for the whole thing? Or was it just explained away and on we go with life?
I think it's probably just like, this is what happened and then we move on with life. I don't think it did anything really for ratings. It's a hard one. So from how it works is, so basically, say you have 10 contestants and it's, you make a total of 20. This is how I understand it works. You make a total of 20. So you get ranked judges' score, public score from 1 to 10, and then they add that together, and that's how you work out who's going home. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it's 10 out of 20, 10 from the judges, 10 from the public, combine the scores, score out of 20.
Yeah. So that's how it worked. And so in that instance, it was the public vote that let her down. And the reason that the text, so basically they snapshot the vote and that's where it is. And the person that was looking after the text had set the reply text and pushed it to start before it had been announced on TV. But the vote had already been snapshotted at this point.
Right.
So, yeah, that's how that happened.
Is it a fun show to do?
Pardon?
Fun show to do? It looks pretty stressful.
I find it really fun. I think the dancers find it really stressful. But I've got the fun part of just, like, kind of bringing it together. I'm there 2.5 days a week. But I really love it because usually it is just a positive vibe. I love the charity element of it. I love that everyone learns about charities that people haven't heard of before. I love getting to know celebrities that people may not, you always get the hey, dancing with the anyones. And you're like, just because, like, I didn't know that we were supposed to know every single celebrity in New Zealand. But a lot of people, there's always the hey, and that annoys me. But I also just love seeing people out of their element and seeing people vulnerable. So, you know, Kerry Woodham, I think people have listened to Kerry on the radio and seen her on TV so much. And now they've seen a completely different side of her that they've never seen before on the show. People that may not have heard of Reese Mathewson before that are now, you know, in love with him. Or Jazz Thornton and the movement that she has around her with mental health and, you know, and Dave Letelier, like, finding out about all these people that you might not know who they were before, but you will after. And I love that element of the vulnerability, the charity, and just the positive vibes. I'd much rather something like that than watching toxic shit like Maths, which I should say was on three.
Yeah, no, and like, it's funny you mentioned Jazz Thornton, because she seems to be someone who does that. That, not that it's been a slow burn, because her rise has been quite meteoric, but it seems that there's a plan there for longevity with what she's doing with her work. You know, I follow her quite closely and, you know, watch what she was doing in America when she was over there, and it seems that there's a real clever plan for her to basically do this her whole life, and when it comes to mental health and that kind of thing.
And that's, like, an amazing thing about Jazz. So, like, I met Jazz through Twitter when she was 12, and she used to listen. She used to listen to The Edge, and she messaged me, and it was at the peak of stuff. If you've read her story, like, it was the peak of some pretty awful stuff, and I was quite young at the time, and I didn't know how to respond. So I would just respond so that she had someone to speak to, and give her resources of people that she could talk to and things like that. But that's how I first met Jazz. And then a few years later, Jazz tried to take her own life. Mm. And so then I didn't hear from Jazz for a long time until she came in for an interview. And I was like, did we used to talk on Twitter when you were a kid? And she was so embarrassed. She was like, I'm so sorry. Yes, that was it. And I remember very vividly that she was messaging another broadcaster who, instead of trying to help her and give her resources or refer her to someone that could help, did a tweet saying that she was crazy. Wow. And I'm like, how can you do that to a 12-year-old girl, like, whose family aren't listening to her? And no, it's not your fault to fix everybody, but it is your job to at least try and give a resource to someone that's reaching out to you.
Yeah.
And so when Jess said that to me, I was like, you have nothing to be embarrassed about. You survived. Like, you survived, and now you are helping other people. Like, you and she's constantly helping people at crisis. And I don't know how she does it and also looks after herself at the same time. But that's one of the things I love about radio, is that you have these connections with people. And I've got connections with listeners that have listened for a long time, whose kids I've then gone on to meet, who, whenever I'm in town, they come and say hi, or if they're in Auckland, they come to the studio. And you build these relationships with your callers that, I don't know, are, like, quite meaningful. And with Jazz, she literally started as a listener, and now she's a friend, you know. And it was,
yeah,
and I'm so proud of her. And when I watched her dance, I literally the first 2 weeks, every rehearsal, I would be teared up because A, she was alive. B, she was smiling. And her journey through Dancing with the Stars was life-changing. At the start, she like struggled to even touch Brad as a dance partner. And she was fully covered. And by the end of it, it was like she realized that she could get out there and be confident in her body. And it was hers and nobody could touch her or anything like that. And that's the sort of stuff I love about Dancing with the Stars, is seeing those journeys of people's confidence within themselves of doing something they never thought they could do.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, I find that really special.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's probably on my bucket list for a podcast at some stage. I've tried a couple of times and have missed out, but I always say I'm not entitled to anyone's time, so it's 100% fine. But, you know, when I see her, some of her Instagram stuff now, or TikToks now, I tear up because you're just like, what is this person? This person is like the best of us.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about the society's only strong as its weakest link. She's like the strongest link. She's like the opposite of that. It's just an amazing, amazing story as to what she does. And
she's
phenomenal.
Sorry to interrupt you. I would never ever share what those messages were, but I will say she was in a very desperate, awful place. And the fact that she's here, she's alive, is a feat in itself. The fact that she dedicates so much time to other people is just, it blows my mind. And, you know, it blows my mind about her. Like, it just, it really does. But even, you know, other people within the show, you know, seeing, you know, there's definitely been journeys, you know, when you're seeing people like Glenn Osborne crying on Dancing with the Stars. To me, like, to some people, maybe not, but to me, for men in New Zealand, where mental health is such a bad thing, to see one of the greatest All Blacks be emotional, even with Manu, seeing them be emotional and vulnerable, that was so powerful to me. And it's more than just a dancing reality show to me, anyway.
Yeah. And the biggest thing I always think about people like Jazz is, like you've just said, she helps everybody. But I've got people in my, let's just say, circle without identifying anyone who had maybe not the same stories, but stories where they could easily have not been here anymore through their younger days. And for someone like her and for people that I know, you know, I've got someone in my circle that I say to them, you know, you're still here.
Yep.
That's actually enough. That's a victory from where you were. You probably shouldn't be here and you're still here. That's enough. You've won.
Yeah.
You know, so anything above and beyond that is just like, holy crap, you're not only here, but you're doing all these things for other people to be here as well. So, you know, I don't know Jazz. I've never met Jazz. But, you know, just her surviving is actually enough of a victory. And anything above and beyond that is just like insurmountably amazing.
Yeah. I agree.
Oh. Hey, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
Because it's something I'm always interested in, especially because you say you like entertainment. How do you kind of think about kids in the media? I mean, you've just had a child. You've got two children now, two boys, I understand. Mm-hmm. What do you and your husband do when it comes to things like, what are we going to do with our kids in the media? Like, you know, you're talking before about, we're talking about how some people or some groups will entertain ideas on their own terms. And I was thinking about a particular person I used to work with in the NZ Me building. I think it was, what did it used to be called? Radio Works? And that was you guys. Media Works, Radio Works. TRN.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago. Who was involved in a celebrity marriage that broke up. Mm-hmm. But they put their marriage in all the women's magazines. Mm-hmm. And they had the cameras and they had all that kind of stuff. When they broke up, they were like, we want privacy. Don't talk to us, don't ask for us. And although if I have to go black and white, which I've struggled to be black and white, but if I had to go black and white, I'd go, everyone's entitled to their privacy.
Yeah.
But the reality is I struggle to be empathetic to someone who's put their whole life in front of the camera, their whole life, and invited people in to then say, well, we're going to now shut the door, you have no more. Because if you've invited someone in, I struggle a bit more with then telling people they have to stay out for your privacy.
Yeah.
And I think about that for me, and I know what decisions I and my then partner made for our kids. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in what you guys have talked about. I mean, you're both in very high profile jobs when it comes to radio. I mean, your husband's yep. on the Rock Breakfast Show, for people who don't know. I'm sure everyone knows. But what do you do about that? About kind of behind closed doors, private family stuff, and exposure in the media world?
We're very so Bryce and I from day one don't do things together. We don't do relationship magazine stories. We don't, if we do something together, it'll be for something dear to us. So it'll be a charity that we are aligned with or something like that.
Yep.
But we are also very protective of and have very clear boundaries with that stuff. So for example, I don't do any magazine story unless A, it is raising awareness for something very dear to me, or if it's something to do with my job. I will not do, and this is each to their own. I have no judgment towards people that do. This is my personal choice.
Sure, sure.
So I have been very clear that I won't do that stuff. I've been very clear that I don't want my kids in that stuff, their faces. And so, like, even we're doing a charity thing soon, Bryce and I, and we've been very clear that what our boundaries are and what photos we want used. We don't want their faces because we have a public job. The boys don't have a public job.
Yeah.
They're kids. So we have, if you look on my Instagram, you'd be hard pressed to find a photo where you can see their face. And this was because he went to a playgroup one time and I wasn't there, and somebody said, "Oh, is that Sharon Casey's kid? Is that Tyson?" And I was like, that's fucking weird for a two-year-old to get, So I don't put that stuff up. Bryce used to, and now very rarely. I'll put him on my Instagram story because it's usually a video and it will die. I haven't put Ruben on there. And I thought that was in a very safe space. And when I have got upset about things like that in the past, I've been told if you put it on Instagram, it's public domain, people can do whatever they want. So now we are very careful to not put their faces on stuff. I also have like so for example, Ruben was born, my son. He was 10 and a half weeks premature.
All right,
it was a very, very traumatic time in my life. And I don't do magazine stories about my kids. I don't want photos in it. And I'm very, very clear that I don't do that stuff, and I'm very clear that I don't want them in that stuff, especially their face. So I am sitting in NICU. My son is in ICU, the highest level of ICU. I've been there for hours, and I go downstairs and I'm like, oh, fuck, I'll get like an entertainment thing to read. I open up this magazine and there is a picture that I put on Instagram of Ruben's feet. Fine. What I put on Instagram, I know that it is a risk, it will get picked up. Right. So I put in what I was comfortable with the public knowing about his birth. He was still in ICU. So I'm reading this magazine. No one's told me. Nobody's asked me. Nobody's alerted me that this was happening. I see it when I'm trying to escape and my baby is newborn in ICU. They have bought up my heartbreaking miscarriages as fodder. They have put in a picture of Bryce Tyson and I from a year ago on Bryce's Instagram.
Wow.
Not once, but twice. A full photo when they know that I don't want that in there. And I understand it's fair game, but I would have thought, it's a small industry. We all help each other. You understand someone's boundary, So that's in the magazine. And also they had incorrectly put what gestation he was born at, which to them was probably not a big deal. To me, is a huge deal as a mother of a premature baby, as a mother that had been in hospital for 5 weeks, a mother that thought I was going to die at one point and had been through a traumatic experience. And now I don't know when my baby's coming home. And you didn't even ask. Yeah. That fucks me off. Like, it's making me so angry just thinking about it. And they know I'm pissed off about it. Never apologized. Nothing like that. Like, you know, and I know that that's happened to other people that I know. You know, Meg from Our Breakfast Show put up a gallery of her child. And then I told her that I was like, hey, I didn't know that you did a story. And she's like, I didn't. I was like, you're on. And then she opens up and there's a 2-page spread of her baby photos and an article like she'd done an interview. And she's devastated. And she's a new mum at home.
Wow.
So for me, I am now extremely careful about what I put the boys on, because yeah. I know that there is no respect whatsoever for me. There's no respect for my child. There wasn't even respect for my baby who was in ICU. So to me, I'm like very careful now. And, you know, I know those people are just doing their job, but I also think we've all worked together before. We're all going to see each other at stuff. Like, why would you not at least text me and say, hey, we're going to do this. Do you mind if I, can I ask you this? You know, because to me.
Well, they can't do that. But they can't do that, because if they text you, then you'd go, I don't want you to report that. And then what are they going to do? This
no, but
junior
that's the thing,
reporter
is like,
or whatever.
If they had texted me, A, I would have told them the gestation.
Right.
Because, but also like, that's nobody's business. But also, I would have given them the correct gestation, because every single one of those days were the longest, most traumatic days of my life.
Sure.
So I would have, so that kind of discounts my experience. And also, I would have like asked them not to put a photo of my child, who is 4, in a magazine for every Tom, Dick, and Harry to look at. And I get it. It was on Instagram, so they can take it, whatever. But you know that I don't want that in there, and you did it anyway. But, like, I'm very good if people text me and they say, hey, do you have a comment on this? Usually if it's somebody I trust, I'll give you something, because I'm not, you know, I'm not an asshole.
Yeah.
So that really genuinely upset me, that I wasn't even given a heads up that it was going to be in there.
Yeah.
You know, like, so that really upset me, especially because he was so sick at the time.
Yeah.
And there was just no respect, and that really pissed me off. So short answer to your, sorry, that was a very long answer. It makes, as you can see, I'm getting very hot and angry.
Yeah.
But it, like, to me, I am very careful. I think it's an individual choice, but I am very careful about what I do post. And also, when I had posted about Ruben being born, there was enough shit in there to write a little blurb about if you thought people were going to, I don't think people care that much, but I had written, there was a lengthy enough blurb for you to get a couple of bits out of. You didn't need to add, you know, other things to it. You know, you didn't need to add incorrect information you didn't have that you've taken a wild guess at, because I'd said on the radio a week before how pregnant I was, you know? So.
I don't understand how that's legal. I had this conversation last night about Guy and Espen's article about Chris Luxon. Sorry to be boring and talk about politics, but because Guy and Espen's article that he wrote about Christopher Luxon was on every media outlet. It was on New Zealand Herald. It was on News Hub, obviously One News and RNZ, probably other places as well. And I'm like, because this is the thing, right? This whole kind of, if it's out, as long as you accredit people to where it came from, you're allowed to use it. It's like, if you run banner ads or surrounds or digital whatever or around it, then that means, for example, News Hub is making money off something that RNZ paid Guy and Espener to do, and they're getting nothing back. I don't know how a magazine's actually allowed to do that, because then they sell that. They're making money off what is basically your content. But it's your content. I mean, I'm not saying your child is your content, but it's your photograph and that kind of thing. I don't know how legally that's allowed to happen. I wonder if anyone's ever challenged that, because it's like I don't get how that's legal to basically use someone. I mean, like, if they use it and then you gotta, like, if you do it on YouTube, if I play a sound clip on YouTube that I don't own, then they get all the money from that clip that I've made. Doesn't matter if it's 30 seconds out of an hour clip, they get all the money generated from that. It goes to them automatically because it's there. They own it. I just don't get how magazines and newspapers and websites can do it without some kind of similar reprise. It doesn't make any sense.
It's a similar thing, right, that David Farrier has been talking about recently with his website Webworm, is that he's done all these massive investigations. He has put in so much thorough research, work, written it up. He's an incredible journalist. And then people see it and they're like, actually, that is a good story, David. Good job. And then they basically steal his story without crediting him whatsoever. And yep. It's not that hard to do that. But, I mean, I know the people that, you know, do this, they aren't bad people. But to me, maybe it's just because that sort of person I am, is that I have that respect and I know people's boundaries and I don't cross them. And if yeah. I was, I'd at least have attempted to let me know. So yeah. I didn't get the fright of my life sitting next to an incubator. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like literally sitting next to an incubator and being like, what the fuck? That's Ruben. What yeah. the fuck? That's me. Oh my God, why is Tyson in here? And yeah. he's in here twice. And then I'm already stressed. And then I have to ring out and ring my husband in tears and be like, they've put Tyson in a magazine. Like, I don't want that. Like, you know? I would have just, like, if they wanted a photo to go with it, you could have, there's plenty of photos where you couldn't see his face. Like, I know he's cute, but there's plenty of photos where you can't see his face.
I'll tell you something that I went through towards when the kids started school, something to think about for you guys, is yeah. that schools typically have a rule that you either, they'll make you sign it like at the start of the year that we can use your child in online content can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I said to them, the problem with that is, of course, if there's a camera in the room, the kids want to do it. So yeah. my kids are like, well, we want to do this. We want to be able to do it. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry. I don't want to do it. And so what we got our primary school to agree to was they could say, look, I've never said my children's name on the radio or any of this, so I won't say them now. Let's just say that yeah. my child's name is Nala. There you go, because she's over there. So you can say Nala from room 8. That's fine.
Yeah.
But you
yeah.
can't say Nala Brittenden from roommate. I'm yeah. happy. And so I asked them to include like a third option, which is first name and room numbers, fine. Yeah. Anytime they get an award, Nala from roommate gets award XYZ, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Because that's something else that people don't think about if they want privacy for their kids. And the point that I was making is this generation coming up next are going to have a digital footprint for their whole life.
Oh,
they
yeah.
can't not have a digital footprint.
Oh, awful.
Which means, and my thought was, just to delay it as much as possible.
Yeah.
Because as you said about you guys have a public job, I mean, these schools have a public face. My kids don't need to be a part of these schools putting yeah. their ideas out there, especially yeah. at that point because I was doing stuff that could have been tracked back to me. It's nothing like what you guys are doing, but that was what we yeah. did with the kids. And like I said, I don't typically talk about my kids. Like I'll talk, like if you look at my Twitter feed and stuff, it'll say Miss 15 or it'll say, you know, Miss yeah. 13 now. But I won't say their names because I'm just like, do
yeah.
their own thing.
I always remember Hillary Barry saying, her saying to me that she talked about her kids until they went to school on yep. radio, and then she didn't talk about them anymore because then they would go to school and it either opens them up to bullying or it gives yep. them this sense of like, my mom's on the radio or something like that.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, if I catch someone being mean to my kid at school and I'm, you do that again, I'm going to say your name on the radio. Maybe, but yeah, no, we are really aware of that. And I think now we've been burnt, we're like very, very protective of it. But like
yeah, no,
Tyson, I always put Tyson on my story because he's very funny, but most of the time it'll just be a video. So you can't really get a clear picture of him.
Is there anything you want to tell us? I mean, you're saying at the start how I've seen the other sleeve's gone up now as well, that you don't like being asked questions.
I know, sweaty. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I felt myself the whole time going like this and then like pulling them back down and putting them back up and like leaning over here. I get so uncomfortable talking about myself, which is probably interesting when I've literally been talking about myself and giving you really long answers. But I very rarely wear makeup in these things because I get so hot and sweaty. So I'm just like, whew! Anyway.
Sorry. I look forward to this whole interview being transcribed by Women's Day as their next double fold-out piece. Is that right? Is that what's going to happen?
Hey, I didn't name anybody. I didn't name a name. Yeah.
You're back in 2 weeks. Is this correct? You're back at 3 to 7?
Yes, I'm going to be back on the edge 3 to 7 from the 20th. And I'm really excited. I am really excited about it. It's going to be good. We had a bit of a meeting today. And yeah, I guess my vibe for our show is we're that fun table at the bar that everyone can be part of. You know how yep. there's that table at the bar that are having a really good time. Hi, Nala. They're having a really good time, but then you're too intimidated to join. That's not that's not my vibe. My vibe is complete opposite. So everyone's blooming welcome, and I just, yeah, I'm really excited to get back into it. Although I'm a bit sad to have the end of maternity leave, but also I got to have 3 more months than I thought I was going to have, so that's fine.
You do, and you do drive.
Yeah.
And Bryce does breakfast. Does that mean you guys were able to just switch over with the parenting thing? He picks up in the afternoon, you drop off, or oh, that's cool. That's a really good system.
Yeah, so I do mornings and he does afternoons. So we're very 50-50. I mean, Bryce probably does an extra hour and a half than I do, and he has a lot more admin in the afternoon. But we do have, like, Tyson's at kindy now, and we do have, like, I hate saying nanny, it makes you sound so wanky, but we have somebody that comes over for like 4 hours a day just to do like the crossover in the middle with baby. Yeah, it's like a lot of people always like, oh, don't you want to do breakfast? I'm like, no, because A, as a kid, I was my most anxious before going to school. So I want one of us to be at home with the boys. And also I hate getting up early. And I've done every day part now, and drive's the best because you get to sleep in and you get home late enough that you never have to cook dinner. So
I was going to say, so Bryce is on dinner then. So you're on breakfast and lunch, and Bryce is dinner. That's how it works.
Yep, pretty much.
Is he a good cook?
He's an amazing cook. I think I've cooked for him probably 5 times in 12 years. Like, legit. He's a great chef, so it's really good.
You got a keeper there, eh?
Oh, my God. It was the worst. He had COVID, and so we isolated him. And I had to look after both the boys, and I had to cook. And by day 4, he was like, I'll just cook in gloves and a mask. I was like, that's good. I made something called macca brocca corner cheese brocca, which was macaroni cheese with broccoli and corn and cheese, obviously, and chicken. And Bryce was not impressed.
Really? It sounds pretty good to me.
It was pretty good. Yeah, it was pretty good. I'm not going to lie. But yeah.
Well, it's been a great time to have fun to chat to you. I'm just checking.
Oh, you too. I genuinely feel very honored that you asked me. I watched Jason Gunn's one and was like, wow. And I was like, this is such a great thing. And I was watching them. And then when you messaged me, I was like, okay, hopefully I'm all right. Hopefully I don't sweat too much and I'm not too boring.
Just a little, I'll give you one piece of advice for the future. I didn't know you were getting sweaty and feeling sweaty. You didn't really need to admit to it because nobody would have known. just a little thought.
I thought you were going to say my advice is to get Botox in all your sweat glands before your next interview. And I was like, okay.
No. Anything you want to leave us with? I mean, you're saying that you don't like being asked questions. You like to ask the questions. Is there anything you want to wrap up with? You can wrap up the episode if you want.
I have no idea. That was so much pressure. I guess just saying who in the comment section isn't that smart. Get smarter comments. And I hope nobody writes who on this. I don't know. Fuck, you've given me too much pressure. I don't know. I will just say that this was fun. You are a fantastic broadcaster, and I feel very honored to have been on this with you. And I hope I wasn't boring. And really sorry for, like, derailing our whole chat with the conversation about sexist stuff and whether you thought it was or not. Because now I'm going to have Sharon Neuer about it afterwards and be like, Sharon, that was such a weird train of thought. But anyway.
I think it's a really interesting train of thought. I think that we're in this place in society right now, literally right now, and I talk about this constantly, where language is evolving right now. And you've got two parts of society. There's probably many parts, but two main parts of society. And one part is saying these words mean this.
Yeah.
And the other part saying these words mean this. And they're opposing each other. It's even happened in academia. If you look at, for example, the social sciences and the, like, biological sciences, they're saying that words mean different things. And we're in a transitional period where, through attrition or just through life going on, there will be a blending of all these words and what they mean. And we will come to understand what these words mean. But right now, one of the reasons there's a lot of conflict and stuff out there, I think, is that there are conversations happening separately to each other using the same words. And I think some of what you talked about to do with, you know, sexist or sexism or whatever is one of those things right now. Now, I'm not saying that to kind of be light and fluffy about the dicks and the misogynists out there. But I think that you'll find that maybe, I went full screen with Nala. I don't know how I did that. We'll go back there. I think that we'll be, over the next 5 to 10 years, our language will evolve quite a lot. And I think you'll find through just the way we're evolving it, people will be on the more on the same page about stuff than they are right now in lots of areas. Yeah. And I think that might relate a little bit into what you talked about to do with the, you know, female broadcaster. It's like, even though you shouldn't have to say that, that might be a part of the transition. Like 20 years ago, it was like, oh my goodness, there's a lady in the newsroom. Whereas whereas today it's like, it should be seen as normal.
Yeah.
But because it's still a minority sex in the newsroom or whatever, it's the transitional stage that maybe in 10 or 15 or 20 years. I mean, it should be normal now. Don't get me twisted.
No,
it should
be normal now.
But we're moving through that literally right now in language in the Western world, I think.
We're going to be the generation that changes things, and I love it. It's very exciting.
I hope you are.
And then our kids are going to be like, all our kids are going to be like, Mom, fuck, you can't say that. And then it'll happen all over again. But
Hey, Sharon, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for giving us an hour or so of your time today, especially whilst you're on maternity leave. And I don't know. I'm sure we'll contact sometime soon again, and I'll do this again with you anytime you want. Happy to do this.
I'd love that.
Anytime you want to have interesting conversations about things that matter, I'm your guy, because that's what we do.
Yes, you are. I'm going to tell Jazz about you too. I'm going to tell her she needs to come on.
I didn't mention that for that reason.
I know you didn't.
I don't like that kind of, oh, do you know? I mean, I did try that once with Joel Tobeck. I was trying to get through to Tyka. I said, Joel, can you hook me up? And after I did that, I kind of felt dirty, like I needed a shower, like I was trying to prostitute myself. So it's not the reason we had the conversation, just to make that clear.
No, I understand. You know, I don't know if you have spoken to him yet, but John O'Prior would be real interesting too. He's like my favorite. I reckon that every radio announcer should have to spend a month with Jono before you go on air, because he's the definition of work hard, get great things, and not be a cock. Like, there's literally not an ounce of ego in Jono, and he's just like, he's the best person in the world. And and his career is like, he hates talking about himself, but his career is unreal, and I don't think he gets the props he deserves for his like radio career especially, but you should talk to him. He's very interesting.
I will definitely approach that. Hey, Sharon Casey, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.